using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong Trash Bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad Force Flex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Influence Change at Work show for Wednesday, April 20th, 2016. I'm your host, Heather Stagel, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia on Blog Talk Radio. This show is one of the many ways I help equip individuals and teams to influence change at Enclaria. You can find more episodes like this one, plus additional resources to help you influence change at work at enclaria.com. Today, my guest is Glory Enyanaya, who joins the show from Nigeria to discuss implementing change in sub-Saharan Africa. Glory is a researcher, writer, and trainer in change management. She has almost a decade of experience in social and organizational transformation in several industries, including consulting, consumer goods, oil and gas, public service, and nonprofits. She has a degree in accounting from the University of Nigeria and has won several academic and professional awards for excellence. As an active member of the Global Association of Change Management Professionals, she represented Africa in defining the Global Certified Change Management Professional Examination. She is also a member of the ProSci Change Management Institute. Glory is the co-author of the upcoming change management book, The Change Manager's Action Plan. She currently maintains a change management blog at thechangecatalyst.com with dashes in between all those words. She is passionate about organizational change in Nigeria and has advocated for proper management of change in local and foreign media. Glory, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Heather. Thank you so much.
Well, let's start with you, and how did you become interested in change management, and what are some of the change initiatives that you've worked on in Africa?
I've worked as a change management practitioner for, like you said, for several projects across West Africa in public service, oil and gas, and FMCG industries. However, I first became interested in change management in 2007. In Nigeria, we have a National Youth Service Corps scheme, or NYSC for short, where recent graduates are expected to serve the country, teachers, care educators, and change agents. So during my NYSC posting, I was deployed to a government agency that was responsible for enacting significant social change in Nigeria. There, I worked as a change agent in what was called the Nigeria Initiative at the time. So that was my very first exposure to change. It was more of social change than organizational change. In 2009, I joined a global consulting firm whose mission is to improve the way the world works and lives. Of course, you can't improve the way organizations work without properly managing change. So virtually every project I was involved in required some level of change management. I was part of a team that was responsible for helping employees in a government agency embrace the changes arising from the modernization program in Nigeria. The outcome of the transformation was really quite positive. As a result of the program, by 2008, the agency's annual revenue exceeded the revenue it had earned over the previous 8 years. So more or less in 1 year, they earned more than they had earned in the previous 8 years. So that experience, where I could see like the huge impact that a properly managed change process could have on the bottom line of an organization, it made me more interested in participating in change management projects. So after a while, I was sent to South Africa for formal change management training in the ProSci methodology. So that was when I began to see the big picture of the seemingly random tasks I'd been performing. So after my training, I started a change blog and I joined the Association of Change Management Practitioners. Soon after, I was engaged as an independent change management consultant for an ERP implementation in an oil and gas firm. So since then, I've evolved from being a change analyst to a change consultant to actually leading change across several countries in West Africa. In one of my most recent roles, I led the West African Change and Communications team during a global rollout of new processes and technology for a multinational FMCG company in Nigeria. So at the end of the project, the changes were seamlessly adopted across West Africa. So after working as an independent consultant for some years, I eventually developed my own approach to change management that inspired me to write a book, which I hope to release next year. So after writing my book, I came to realize that it's important to understand the theories underlying change management, as well as how change management relates to other areas like leadership, ethics, and so on. So this led me to my current role in Lagos Business School. I manage the Center for Research in Leadership and Ethics. So in a nutshell, that's my change journey so far.
So you've done a lot in a short period of time. That's impressive.
Thank you.
So you mentioned that you're part of the research center at Lagos Business School. And so I was wondering, what is the nature of your research?
Okay, so in CRLE, we carry out several research projects in the broad field of leadership and ethics. However, one of our ongoing projects touches on the role of change management as a critical element in organizational transformation. So we're in the process of co-authoring a research study with a former partner in Accenture, where we specifically focus on change management within the public sector. So change management within the public sector is topical in Nigeria. Government is making determined efforts to reform agencies and ministries to be leaner and more efficient. So specifically, our paper explores the role change management plays in a successful transformation effort. And as a case study, we use an actual live change management transformation in public sector in Nigeria. So we try to localize the wide range of academic literature on change management, and we situate it within events in one of the top government agencies in Nigeria. So in our literature review, we established 7 change components that form the basis for our data collection and analysis. So the 7 change components are leadership, change stimuli, vision, communication, employee participation or involvement, training, and institutionalization. So I'll talk through the 7 change components. So leadership, for instance, was recently identified as a major contributor to the success of any change journey. So leadership essentially has the primary responsibility of putting forward the case for change and inspiring like a lot of urgency for the change. And by doing so, they end up creating like a strong change stimuli within the organization. And then they end up developing a vision which inspires the whole organization and which various stakeholders can align to. Then communication of this vision must then be clear, consistent, frequent in order to motivate stakeholders to participate in the change and lower resistance to the change. Yeah, then we also have staff participation or involvement, which was identified as something critical that ensures that any changes that are made can be institutionalized in the organization as the new way of doing things, and in so doing, come up with a new culture in the organization. Training was also highlighted as something that was important, because you need to train staff on the changes in the tools and processes in order to help them really absorb the changes really quickly and help and aid assistance, which eventually leads to institutionalization of the change. So we, in our study, we investigated these 7 change themes and localized within our case study. So we also used the broad theoretical framework of Kurt Lewin's model for change and John Cotter's 8-step change model, as well as our 7 change components to examine the practical change events in the organization from the perspective of multiple stakeholders in the organization. So we also used a mixed research approach, so meaning we used a blend of qualitative and quantitative research methods. So a focus group discussion session also helped in filling the gaps and validating the observed patterns in the data, as well as providing explanation about the facts behind the statistics observations. And finally, we interviewed the agency's leadership to obtain the qualitative data that validated the relevance of the 7 thematic areas. Finally, a 60 questionnaire was administered on the respondent sample. We used SPSS and Microsoft Excel to analyze the collected data for frequency and to establish patterns in the responses. So that was that eventually, that, I mean, that's more or less a research, management.
And what's the most interesting thing you've discovered in your research?
The study revealed that the seven change components are highly interconnected and often complementary. So, for instance, in that particular organization, they established that change stimuli, there was a very strong change stimuli and a very comprehensive vision. And those were the areas of strength of the transformation. So everybody could talk about the pillars of the reform, and they had everything at their fingertips. Even the lowest member of staff, and they were able to talk about why they were changing and the need for change. So the vision was pervasive. Everybody was on board and everybody was committed to the change. But there were some other levers were not so strongly leveraged, and there were areas of concern. So we ended up making practical suggestions on actions that could help address the areas of concern. So, but from our study, we found out that leadership and communication were like a very key levers that should be actively deployed in any change initiative to achieve success in the change situation. Particularly, leadership was found to be very key in managing various stakeholders in a change situation. So the importance of communication and engagement between leadership and all levels of the organization couldn't be overemphasized in our study.
Okay, so let's see how is this affecting Africa, or how does this regionalize to Africa? So what are some of your reflections on leading transformation and change in Africa?
Well, Africa, one of the jokes people usually tell about Africa is that non-Africans tend to think Africa is a country, but Africa is a continent.
Right.
So you say, I'm going to Africa. Oh, have you been to Africa? Like, you know, like we're one homogeneous state. But Africa is actually a continent made up of 54 independent states. So the continent has a lot of potential, and it has a lot of potential to leverage its technology and people and resources to create long-lasting change. And change management can be the catalyst, I believe. Change management can be the catalyst to enable the state to take the continent from a caterpillar state to a transformed butterfly state. So to quote a researcher called Ackerman, he said that transformation is a process triggered by a profound shift in worldview where leaders realize that the organization can't continue to function and produce what the future demands without undergoing a radical shift. So in order for Africa to attain this state of transformation successfully, I believe change management practitioners need to be hypersensitive to the inherent cultural values in Africa. So change management more or less has been applied from a Western philosophy and has been taken to a global level. But there's a need for us to understand the complexity of each African country's underlying values and behavioral history.
That's a great observation. And so I'm curious if you have any ideas or examples of what would be different from the westernized vision or vision of change management versus something that's applied in Africa.
So generally, that's a very good question. But before answering your question, I'd like to give like a brief history of how change has played out in Africa thus far. So it's been over 50 years and counting since the winds of change blew across Africa and they became independent and Africa's right to self-determination and transformation. So the 60s, for instance, were heady days where, you know, there were a lot of aspirations and the newly liberated African people had dreams of transformative change. So it was a period when followers and leaders were passionate to show to the world that the new African is ready to fight his own battle and show that, after all, the Black person can manage his or her own affairs. Today, though, even though Africa is being hailed in numerous international quarters, such as The Economist, as rising, we find that the optimism of the 60s has been tempered by the reality of failed or limp transformation, which gave rise to a lot of questions as to why is there such a defined limitation in transformative change in Africa. So I think McKinsey conducted a study and they found out that the real challenge is really a lack of new ideas and innovative concepts. Rather, neither is it the availability of funds. So most often the problem is the difficulty of implementing simple solutions in a sustainable way. So the question now kind of comes to say that why has a continent that is so promising struggled to realize its potential while other regions seem to have shifted the dial? However, I'm not trying to paint a completely black picture about Africa, because we actually had a lot of innovations, trailblazing innovation hubs such as Kenya's M-Pesa, the iCal, and the eLimo. And these hubs, they're getting past the inefficiencies of the government in their countries and the absence of traditional infrastructure. And they're in their own way, they're bringing about the creative sparks of transformative change, which we hope will spread to other parts of Africa. However, to go back to the question about how the Western philosophy of change plays out in Africa and how it affects the implementation of Africa, of change in Africa, I would like to say, well, first of all, change management, I believe, is culturally relative. So, for instance, the modern-day change management emerged out of the U.S. in the 1940s and the 1950s. And more or less a Western-defined approach to change that relied on cultural assumptions of open discussion and individualistic, humanistic values. So there's a lot of openness in the West. You know, people say it as it is. And there's a lot of emphasis on individualism, more or less. So looking at face value, it kind of seems to contrast with the cultural practices in most African societies, you know. So one now, it now begs the question, could this possibly be the reason why transformation in change in Africa has not achieved the desired outcomes or the same outcomes that it achieves in the West? So as I was doing this question, I dug deep into the literature, and then I found out that some researchers kind of have different views about this. Some researchers, such as Blount, Jones, and Charles, they argue that since change management evolved out of the Western value of individualistic and open and participatory society, its practice needs to be limited to the Western world. You know, that's one view. However, on the opposite side, we have people like Lewis, Ali, and Kigondu who say that even though the roots of modern-day change management are American, we also have some interface. The development of change management also has some interface with Europe, because the beginning of change management was shaped by European thinkers such as Adam Smith, John S. Mill, Max Weber, and Leo Tolstoy. So that kind of tends to suggest that change management interventions are cross-cultural. So it doesn't necessarily have to reside within one region. It can spread across the globe. And
I'm curious about how change management could be different in Africa, or different, you know, we can say specifically Nigeria, and Africa is a continent. But and there's a lot of different cultures even within Africa. So, but I'm just curious, like, because you say Westway's approach to change management is individualistic and open, and so would it be different in Africa, and how could change management change to maybe work better in Africa or in Nigeria?
Okay, well, there's a sociologist called Hofstede who he did some work on culture, and then he came up with five dimensions of culture, like power distance, which is the extent to which people exercise power in a formal setting. Then uncertainty avoidance, so it's the extent to which people either tend towards fixed or flexible structures, then individualism versus collectivism, masculinity versus femininity, and long-term versus short-term orientation. So following Hofstede's framework, we tend that African societies tend to have high power distance relationships and high uncertainty avoidance. So if you contrast, so, you know, there's translated into more latent, it's more like there's an emphasis on hierarchy and authority and, you know, structure, hierarchical structure in African societies, and people tend to follow norms and rules and conduct. They tend not to venture into the unknown, but it's a bit different in the US and in the West. So there, you know, there's lower power distance and lower uncertainty avoidance. So it helps change management thrive because, you know, there's a natural acceptance of innovation and things like that. So, for instance, in high power distance societies like Africa, it's not usually not possible to achieve very frank and open communication between members of different hierarchical levels, because participation by junior members seems to be more symbolic than real. So people just tend to go along with whatever their boss says, and they don't necessarily assert themselves, and they have a different opinion from what people at the top feel. So, well, as you can imagine, that leads to some changes, some challenges in implementing change in Africa. So, for instance, Transformation Africa tends to be a bit ineffective because of some factors such as colonialism and its impact on the psyche of people. So, for instance, it was a bit prevalent during the colonial era that the ruling elite, there was like a separation of powers between the ruling elite and then people who were being led. So in the sense, it created a natural imbalance where people tended to feel that the ruling elite or the Western culture was sort of superior to the traditional African culture. So a lot of things such as values, both language, proverbs, and rituals tended to lose, things that were germane to Africa tended to lose a bit of its relevance. So it now leads one to now ask, so what exactly needs to change in this kind of setting? So digging deeper into African societies, for instance, we'll find that even though Hobbes gave a generalization that there's a high power distance in Africa, there are actually some exceptions. So, for instance, there are some Akan societies in Ghana where there's a lot of openness and decision-making, and the voices of everyone are invited into a discussion before you arrive at a particular decision. We also have societies where women are given the opportunity to express themselves and decisions are made. So what that tends to imply is that we can't just have a one-size-fits-all approach and just assume maybe on one spectrum that we can't just assume on one spectrum that, okay, Africans have high power distance and so they're not open to change. And at the same time, we can't also assume that Africans are just exactly like the Western culture, and everything that works in the West is going to work in Africa. So there's a need for people, for change management practitioners, to be culturally sensitive and dig deep, find out exactly what's happening in each organization and each culture where they find themselves. In that way, they'll be able to tailor the change management methodology that they bring from the West into the African society and make sure it's effective.
I'd also like to ask about what are some of the challenges of implementing change in a developing country? You said a rising country, I think is how you described it. So I'm curious what your reflections are about that.
Okay. Like I said, I think the main challenge is understanding the unique culture of the organization where you find yourself. So, for instance, if you conduct a study of change management in developing countries, you'll find out that change management tends to be more effective in multinational organizations, you know, because multinational organizations tend to have like a standardized culture where more or less, for want of a better word, a one-size-fits approach, right, which everyone conforms to. So, for instance, if you want to import a change from, say, Germany, where the multinational company is headquartered, to maybe Kenya, for instance, there's a tendency that the change will be relatively smooth because everyone has a common understanding, common procedures, and, you know, it's a multinational organization, so everybody tends to follow the same rule. But it tends to be a bit different when you look into indigenous or, for instance, public sector organizations where you have to understand, you have to drive change in line with the pervading national culture. So you need to take into consideration the ethos and the values of the system to make sure that the change that you bring in is aligned to the values of the organization. So I would say that is the major challenge, understanding the culture and then making sure that you don't just import methodologies wholesale, but you align it to the culture which is on ground in the developing country.
Okay. And your answer kind of surprises me because you're talking all about culture, and I sort of expected a challenge of resources or a challenge of funds, and so you're saying that that's not the issue.
No. I wouldn't say that's the issue because in terms of resources and funds, I mean, like, I think the I earlier mentioned a McKinsey study where they said the challenge of change in Africa is not always the lack of ideas or funding because, Africa is resource rich, and even if we were to have a lot of multilateral organizations like the World Bank and WHO that are keen to support the development agenda in Africa and all of that. So I wouldn't say the challenge is funding, you know, per se. I would just say because change in Africa or organizational change is a new field. It's not as established as it is in the West. So we've had people like Kotlewin propounding theories since the previous century. In Africa, it's a new thing. So any change is not there.
Okay. So we're almost out of time here, so I just want to ask you where people can learn more and how can they connect with you?
Okay. Well, like I mentioned earlier, I blog at www.the-change-catalyst.com, and you can learn more by reading my articles. You can also connect to me by dropping me a message on the contact form on the blog. Then, of course, I'm on LinkedIn, and I have some other social media accounts where I can be contacted.
Great. So if there's one thing that you want to leave people with as far as, you know, how can people be successful implementing change in sub-Saharan Africa, what would you tell them?
Okay, well, I would say it's important for them to focus on the individual culture of the country where they're trying to implement change in, you know, and not just more or less import methodologies wholesale, especially in a multinational corporation, it could probably work. And, you know, I've worked in several multinational corporations where we all adopted the same methodology and it worked. But in an indigenous organization, you're likely to come across some bottlenecks. So it would be important to study not just change from a technical point of view, but also from an anthropological point of view. So understand the culture and the sociology in the organization, in the country, before you think about some kind of change. Yeah.
Great. Well, Glory, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Influence Change at Work show. Next month, my guest will be Dan Pontefract, the best-selling author of Flat Army. He'll join the show to discuss his new book that's coming out next month called The Purpose Effect. If you'd like to find more resources to help you influence change in your organization, including individual coaching, team workshops, and upcoming training events, please visit inclaria.com. While you're there, sign up for the monthly newsletter and receive 12 free templates from my change management toolkit, The Irresistible Change Guide. Until next time, best wishes on your change initiative.
choosing an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong Trash Bags, always at an ultra-low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
There are best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be...
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong Trash Bags, always at an ultra-low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
There are best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be...
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!